You ever stand next to an airplane and think, there is no way this thing flies? I mean, genuinely look at it and wonder if somebody's pulling your leg. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because today we're talking about the biggest, heaviest, most stubborn single-engine fighter of the Second World War, the Republic P-47 Thunderbolt. They called it the Jug. And before we're done, you're going to understand why that nickname was a term of deepest affection from the men who flew it. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, let me set the scene. It's 1943. The 8th Air Force is flying B-17 Fortresses deep into occupied Europe. The losses are horrific. 10% of a bombing formation gone on a single mission. The Luftwaffe fighters are climbing up, making head-on passes, and the escort fighters the Americans have just cannot stay with the bombers long enough. The P-38 Lightning is fast, but the turbochargers ice up at altitude over Europe. The Spitfire is a thing of beauty, but it doesn't have the legs for a deep escort mission. What the bomber boys need is a fighter that can go deep, take punishment, and still fight its way home. Enter the Jug. Alexander Kartveli was a Georgian, and I mean the country Georgia, tucked between Russia and Turkey, not the state. He came to America in the 1920s and ended up as chief designer at Republic Aviation out on Long Island. Kartveli had already designed the P-35 and the P-43 Lancer, and when the Army Air Corps came asking for a new fighter, he started with something sleek and lightweight. But the military kept adding requirements. They wanted 850 caliber machine guns, they wanted armor plate behind the pilot, they wanted a turbocharger to fight at altitude, and they wanted self-sealing fuel tanks. Every one of those requirements added weight. And weight is the enemy of every airplane designer who has ever sharpened a pencil. Kartveli looked at the numbers and reportedly told his team, "It will be a dinosaur, but it will be a dinosaur with good proportions." He wasn't wrong. The P-47 grew and grew. The Pratt & Whitney R-2800 Double Wasp radial engine was an 18-cylinder beast putting out 2,000 horsepower. That engine alone weighed over 2,500 pounds. Then you add the turbocharger and its associated ductwork, which ran from the engine all the way back under the cockpit and out to the belly of the airplane. That ductwork is actually why the fuselage was so deep and round. The airplane was literally built around the turbocharger plumbing when the XP-47B first flew on May 6, 1941. It weighed over 12,000 pounds empty. Fully loaded for combat, you were looking at close to 14,000 pounds. For a single-seat, single-engine fighter. That was nearly twice the weight of a Spitfire. The wingspan stretched 40 feet 9 inches. The propeller was a massive 12-foot 2-inch Curtiss Electric, and it had to be that big to absorb all that horsepower. Here's a detail I love. The airplane was so tall sitting on its gear that early models needed a belly-mounted stirrup step so the pilot could actually climb up to the cockpit. You didn't step into a P-47, you climbed it like a ladder. Now here's where it gets interesting. When the Jug arrived in England in January of 1943 with the 56th Fighter Group, the RAF pilots took one look and laughed. They actually laughed. One British pilot supposedly said, "It's obvious, the Yanks intend to win the war by sheer weight of numbers, not of aircraft, but of the aircraft itself." The P-47 looked like a barrel with wings compared to the elegant Spitfire, but that laughter dried up fast. The 56th Fighter Group, the Wolf Pack under Colonel Hubert Zemke, took the Jug into combat on April 15, 1943, and the results spoke for themselves. In a dive, the P-47 was absolutely devastating. That massive weight and that huge engine gave it a terminal velocity that nothing in the Luftwaffe could match. If a Thunderbolt pilot had altitude, he owned the fight. The standard tactic became what they called boom and zoom. Climb above the enemy, roll in, dive at tremendous speed, fire those 850 calibers, and pull back up before the other guy could react. A Focke Wulf or a Messerschmitt that tried to follow a Jug in a dive was asking to have its wings torn off, and those 8 M2 Browning 50 caliber machine guns. Let me tell you what that meant in practical terms. Each gun fired about 800 rounds per minute. 8 guns meant 6,400 rounds per minute. That's over 100 rounds per second pouring out of the wings. The ammunition load was 3,400 rounds. Pilots described the effect as a buzzsaw. You didn't so much aim at a target as erase it, but the thing that made the P-47 legendary, the thing that made pilots fall in love with this big, ugly airplane, was its ability to take punishment and keep flying. The stories are almost unbelievable. Robert S. Johnson of the 56th Fighter Group came back from a mission over Europe in June of 1943, with his Thunderbolt shot to absolute pieces. A Focke Wulf 190 had put over 200 rounds into his airplane. The canopy was shattered, the hydraulics were gone, the controls were damaged. The Focke Wulf pilot actually pulled alongside and stared at Johnson, apparently unable to believe the American was still flying. Johnson's engine was still running. That Pratt & Whitney radio with its air-cooled cylinders just would not quit. He made it back to England and counted 21 hits from 20mm cannon shells alone, not counting the rifle caliber holes. A liquid-cooled engine takes one round through the coolant system and you're done in minutes. That radiator bleeds out and the engine seizes, but the R2800 was air-cooled. You could shoot individual cylinders off and the remaining cylinders kept firing. Pilots came home with chunks of engine missing. They came home with control surfaces blown away. They came home with holes in the fuselage big enough to put your fist through. And the jug brought them home. There's a famous photograph of a P-47 with the entire right elevator and half the rudder gone. The pilot landed it. There's another account of a Thunderbolt that belly landed in a French field, was repaired by the ground crew, and flew another 30 missions. By mid-1944, Republic had developed the P-47D, the definitive model. And this is where the airplane truly came into its own. They added a bubble canopy for better visibility. They increased the internal fuel capacity. With external drop tanks, the Thunderbolt could now escort bombers deep into Germany. And when the escort mission was done, the pilots discovered something wonderful. This airplane, this massive 7-ton, 8-gun monster, was the greatest ground attack platform of the war. Think about it. You've got a pilot sitting behind an engine that weighs as much as a small car. That engine is essentially a giant radial shield protecting everything vital. Behind the engine, armor plate protects the pilot. Self-sealing tanks make the fuel system survivable, and you've got 8 heavy machine guns that can shred anything on the ground. Later models could carry 2,500 pounds of bombs or 10 5-inch rockets under the wings. The P-47 became the workhorse of the tactical air war in Europe. During the breakout from Normandy, Thunderbolts flew ground support missions that were so effective the German soldiers came to dread them above almost all other Allied aircraft. The 9th Air Force's fighter bomber groups would fly 3, 4, 5 sorties a day, strafing convoys, hitting rail yards, knocking out bridges, and destroying tanks. The Germans called the Jabos, short for Jagdbomber, fighter bombers, and the Jug was the most feared of them all. Here are the numbers, and they are staggering. P-47 pilots destroyed over 9,000 enemy aircraft. They also destroyed 86,000 railroad cars, 9,000 locomotives, 6,000 armored vehicles, and over 68,000 trucks. No other fighter in the war compiled a ground destruction record even close to that, and the human cost of flying those missions cannot be overlooked. The Thunderbolt was tough, but it wasn't invincible. Low-level strafing runs were among the most dangerous missions in the war. Light flak, the 20mm and 37mm guns, were waiting at every target. Republic built over 15,600 P-47s, and a lot of them didn't come home. But the ratio tells the real story. The P-47 achieved a kill ratio of 4.6-1 in air-to-air combat, and the loss rate per sortie was the lowest of any American fighter in the European theater. Out of all those thousands of Thunderbolts built, the airplane lost fewer aircraft in combat relative to the number of missions flown than either the P-38 or the P-51. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Tail dragger, what about the Mustang? And look, the P-51 was a magnificent airplane. It changed the war when it got the Merlin engine and could escort bombers all the way to Berlin and back. I'm not here to take anything away from the Mustang, but the P-47 could do things the Mustang couldn't. It could absorb damage that would have killed the Mustang 3 times over. It could dive faster. And in the ground attack role, it was simply in a class by itself. There's a reason Francis Gabreski, the top American ace in Europe with 28 victories, flew a Thunderbolt. There's a reason Zemke's Wolfpack, the 56th Fighter Group, was the only group in the 8th Air Force that refused to transition to the P-51. They loved their jugs, they trusted them. After the war, the P-47 faded from the spotlight. The sleek Mustang became the icon of American air power. The Thunderbolt was too big, too heavy, too unglamorous for the history books. Most of those 15,000 airframes were scrapped, melted down, gone. Today, fewer than a dozen P-47 Thunderbolts remain airworthy in the world. Think about that. 15,600 built, and you can count the flying survivors on your fingers. Every one of them is precious. If you ever get the chance to hear one fly, do it. That R2800 at full power is a sound you feel in your sternum. It's deeper and throatier than a Merlin. It doesn't scream, it roars. And when a jug goes by low, you understand in your bones why the Germans ran for cover. The P-47 Thunderbolt wasn't pretty. It wasn't elegant. It wasn't fast enough to catch everything in the sky. But it did its job, it brought its pilots home and it won a war. Sometimes the most beautiful airplane is the one that gets you back to the field. I leaned on some wonderful sources today, including Warren Beatty's Republic's P-47 Thunderbolt and the combat accounts from Robert Johnson's memoir, Thunderbolt. Both essential reading, if this airplane speaks to you. You can find more stories like this at radiohangar.com. This is Tail Dragger. Go find a jug at an air show this summer. Stand next to it, look up at it, and remember what it did.